just like he would have to do with Sam Wingo and perhaps his son, and Sean King and Michelle Maxwell. He was pretty certain they would have to die before this was all over. He drew his gaze from the plane overhead as it disappeared down past the trees. In a few seconds, its wheels would hit the tarmac and the reverse thrusters and brakes would be applied. Another safe landing, just as happened millions of times a year. His own landing would probably not be so smooth. But Grant had a chance, a real chance, to make it all work, achieve his goal of justice, and then slip back into a normal life. That would be the ideal. With the burden gone, he could live again. Others were not to be so fortunate. More people were going to die before this was all over, and Grant knew exactly who most of them were. It would be a historical event in the eyes of the world. But for him, it would just be avenging the memory of the man he held most dear.
Chapter 55.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Sean clicked off the phone and looked up at Michelle. Keeping on the move, they were in another motel room they had paid for in cash. Sean had just gotten off the phone with President John Cole.
Are we good to go with POTUS?
I think so. At least with him behind us, we can go pretty much anywhere and ask pretty much anything.
I noticed you handled the question of Tyler Wingo very smoothly.
I'm not looking to derail McKinney's or Littlefield's careers. They might prove useful. The president is expecting us to deliver Tyler at some point. We just have to executive flag that.
So where do we go first?
Pentagon. We're meeting with the head of procurement who was involved in the Cash in Afghanistan program, and Colonel Leon South, who was Sam Wingo's immediate superior in the field.
Let's roll, then.
An hour later, they were being escorted down a long corridor at the Pentagon. In fact, every corridor at the Pentagon was long. It was a labyrinth beyond all labyrinths. Indeed, it was rumored that employees from the 1960s were somewhere in the bowels of the place still looking for an exit. They reached an outer office and then were escorted into an adjacent conference room. Two men were waiting for them. One was in uniform, the other was not. Dan Marshall rose and held out his hand.
Mr. King, Ms. Maxwell, welcome to the Pentagon. I'm Dan Marshall, Assistant Secretary of Acquisitions, Logistics, and Technology. I'm the one who spends a lot of the taxpayers' dollars around here. They shook hands.
Colonel South did not rise to greet them. He merely nodded and said, Colonel Leon South, I understand you're here with the President's blessing. Sean, Michelle, and Marshall sat at the table. Sean said, That's right. South said, I'm not sure how private investigators figure into a classified mission. I'm really not. Can you explain that to me?
Marshall said, Leon, surely with the president's authorization, we don't need to get into that.
Sean said, I can understand the query. We stumbled into the case mostly by accident. By a series of fortuitous events, we ended up becoming close with one of the main players in this little saga. The president deemed that valuable, and that's why we're in the loop.
South nodded slowly, but his features remained inscrutable.
So, what do you want from us?
Sean said, Some background on the mission, some insight into Sam Wingo.
Wingo is a traitor, began South.
Marshall held up his hand. We don't know that, Leon. We don't know a lot of things, actually.
€1 billion gone missing, along with Wingo? I think we know all we need to know.
But he contacted you, said Marshall, and protested his innocence in the strongest possible terms.
Of course he did, to throw us off, retorted South.
When did he contact you? Asked Sean.
Shortly after the mission cratered.
What did he say happened?
Asked Michelle.
That there were strange men at the rendezvous spot. They said they were CIA and had the creds to prove it.
Have you spoken with Langley about this? Asked Sean. South looked at him contemptuously. No, I just took him at his word. Sean said, okay. What did Langley say when you contacted them? That they had no idea what the hell he was talking about. They had no agents anywhere near this mission. How many times did Wingo contact you? Asked Sean, changing gears. Twice. Both times to moan about being innocent, and about finding out who set him up.
And you obviously didn't believe him.
No, I didn't.
Did you know Wingo before this mission?
By reputation, which was a solid one. Otherwise, he would not have been selected. And yet you just assume he's guilty, said Sean inquiringly. Missing money and missing men. Yeah, I do, South replied in a curt tone. Let's assume for the moment that he is telling the truth, began Sean. Who would benefit from setting him up? Marshall said, anyone who wanted €1 billion. I said all along that we should have at minimum sent in a 3-man team, but I was overruled. It was too much for one person, even someone as skilled as Sam Wingo. Sean looked at him. Did you know Wingo beforehand? Just by reputation, like Leon.
And you don't think he's guilty?
I haven't formed a conclusion one way or another. I know we went through a tremendous vetting process and had to endure a year's worth of setting up an arrangement with another field agent that impacted his private life.
That would be Jean Shepherd, his supposed second wife.
Yes. And she's disappeared too, said Sean. Right, interjected South. Maybe they're on the Riviera right now, enjoying the fruits of their theft. So you think they were in on it together? Why not? They had a year to plan it. €1 billion sets them up for life. I might agree with you, but for one thing, said Sean. What's that? Asked South. Tyler Wingo.
We don't think he would ever abandon his son. By all accounts, they were incredibly close.
South shrugged. Maybe he plans to come back for the kid.
So that also makes his son an accessory after the fact, a fleeing felon at age 16.
That much money will make people do strange things, replied South. We understand that the money was intended for certain Muslim freedom fighters to use to purchase weapons. Is that true? Asked Sean. South and Marshall exchanged nervous glances.
Is that a yes?
Marshall cleared his throat. It's not untrue.
Good, because that's what the president told us.
So why ask us? South groused.
Just making sure everyone's on the same page.
So a mess for the White House, said Sean. Not just the White House, said Marshall. Technically, such funds are not to be conveyed in that manner. So we're all in the same boat. I doubt whether Congress will take a scalpel to this. More like a meat cleaver, said South.
So you mean technically it might be illegal?
The argument could be made, said Marshall. The freedom fighters may be fighting against a regime that is not our ally, but it's not as though most of those rebels are knights in shining armor. Many of them want to bring Sharia law to prominence in the secularized Arab countries, added South. And in the countries that already have Sharia law, they could still be as bad as or worse than the regimes in power now. So it's a shitty situation all the way around. Like us supporting Osama bin Laden and the Mujahideen in Afghanistan against the Soviets in the 1970s, noted Sean. They later used the weapons we bought them against our troops. Geopolitics is not and never will be an exact science, noted South.
Some might say common sense might be enough.
Well, they'd be wrong, wouldn't they? Snapped South. So, your career will take a hit over this, right? Said Sean, staring at him. South's face turned red. I'm more concerned about making this right than whether my next promotion will come through. So, if the mission had gone according to plan, what was Wingo's role? South said, to accompany the money to its end source, the freedom fighters. There was a group of them who were supposed to meet him at the drop spot. He was to follow them with the money out of the country. We had the route planned out and the proper authorizations needed with the tribal chiefs along the way.
Why Afghanistan? Why not just bring the money directly to the freedom fighters?
We couldn't be that transparent, said South. In fact, the money technically wasn't going directly to the freedom fighters. There was an intermediate step where the funds were going to go to purchase weapons and ammo. From whom? South and Marshall exchanged another glance but said nothing. Sean said, Unless my memory fails me, there's one big country directly next to Afghanistan that isn't exactly our friend.
And that would be Iran.
Sean looked squarely at South. Please tell me we weren't dealing with freedom fighters to overthrow the government in Tehran. Neither confirm nor deny, and I doubt the president gave you a direct answer on that, added South. Sean looked at Marshall. We really need to know. Marshall nodded and rose. South put a restraining hand on his arm. Dan, think about what you're doing. Leon, they have the president's blessing. And how can they figure this out without knowing the whole story? He went to a wall where there was a paper map of the world. He pointed to several spots. The actual plan was to loop north. The Euros would be laundered in Turkmenistan and Kazakhstan. And the Russians were okay with that? Sean asked quickly. Marshall looked at South. The colonel said, They were on board. It's complicated geopolitics for a neophyte like yourself, but rest assured that they're as tired of Iran's chest thumping as we are. Sean shook his head. I don't think so. What? Snapped South. The Russians like saber-rattling, particularly when it gives us grief. Prime example, Syria. In addition, Russia's economy is based largely on oil and gas, of which they have a ton. If the hardliners in Tehran get ousted and their oil comes back on the world market, the price goes down. That would hurt Moscow big time. Their economic stabilization plan is actually destabilization in the region. The more fragile things are, the more money they make on their natural resources. Marshall smiled, and Michelle looked impressed. She said,
How do you know all that?
Sean shrugged. Hey, I enjoy The Economist as much as the next neophyte. Marshall continued. The weapons were to be purchased through intermediary arms dealers in Turkey and then brought over the border there and into Syria, and then onward to the freedom fighters. In Iran? Said Sean. The freedom fighters were from Iran? Marshall nodded. Okay. And Wingo was to ride shotgun over all of it? Asked Sean. That's right, replied Marshall, as he sat back down.
An army soldier involved in something that smacks of the intelligence world?
Observed Michelle. Talk to us about the DIA, said Sean. I'm with the DIA, said South. So was Wingo. Most people don't realize the DIA dwarfs CIA in manpower and resources. We've been recruiting and training thousands of new field agents for missions worldwide. We drop them into regular army units that are dispersed worldwide and then keep them there after the units pull out. It's a terrific cover, actually. Our enemies have long since caught on to the fact that State Department cover is for intelligence operatives. We work with the CIA on many joint ops, but this one we were heading up. He paused. And we blew it big time, which means it might be our last mission lead. Sean looked at him curiously. Which means Langley would be the boss in any future operations? Probably. So they have a motive to blow this up? Marshall shook his head. I highly doubt that. Before this is over, everybody will have egg on their faces. And if they did and the truth came out, the CIA would be emasculated for decades to come. Far too risky.
What steps have you taken to track Wingo?
Every step we could think of, said South.
And you think Wingo is a lone wolf on this?
Yes. Then we know he's innocent, said Sean. How? There are quite a few people involved in this, actually. Several of them have tried to kill my partner and me, and not one of them was Sam Wingo. Well, with the money he has now, he can hire whoever he wants to do his dirty work, replied South. My gut is telling me otherwise, Sean said. Oh, well, that makes all the difference to me, said South sarcastically. Marshall said, Do you think you can find Sam Wingo? We're going to do our best, and we have great incentive. You mean because the president is counting on you, said Marshall. No, said Sean, because it means we'll probably get to keep living. Chapter 56 Sean sat in his car and gazed over at the building. A voice crackled in his earwig.
Vista Trading Group is on the sixth floor,
said Michelle, who was sitting in an outdoor cafe near the next intersection. Got it.
Edgar was very helpful in getting us so much information so fast.
Yeah, but it wasn't all that helpful, said Sean. Vista is a legit business. Alan Grant comes from a good family. His dad was in the military, then in civilian government. And Grant doesn't have a blemish on his record. Former soldier, too. Now a successful businessman. Not even any parking tickets.
Yeah, he's clean. Too clean, in my opinion.
Can't convict a guy for being too law-abiding.
But one of the men who works there has Sam Wingo's interest for some reason.
We don't know what that interest is. It would be nice to ask Wingo directly.
Have you emailed Tyler?
Twice. No response yet.
Someone might be monitoring the new Gmail account.
I used his code, just asked if he was okay, that we wanted to be in touch.
Wingo might not be letting him respond. He might not trust us.
If I were him, I wouldn't trust anyone, replied Sean.
So what do we do about Vista?
We wait. 4 hours later, when Michelle had ordered but not touched her fourth cup of coffee, their patience was rewarded. Sean's voice crackled in her ear. Alan Grant and our bogey on your three. Michelle imperceptibly turned to look in that direction. She had on a ball cap pulled low with her long hair bundled up inside it. Wide sunglasses covered the top half of her face.
Eyeballs on.
Grant and his colleague looked like young, successful businessmen having a quick meeting on the street. Michelle couldn't hear what they were saying, and she didn't want to risk getting up and crossing the street to get closer. If they spotted her, it might blow their only chance to advance the investigation.
Plan?
If they split up, I'll take Grant, you take the bogey. If they both go inside the office building, follow them in, see and hear what you can. Same if the bogey goes in alone.
What if they ID me?
You're pretty well disguised and there are a lot of people around. I think we just have to risk it.
And you?
If one or both leave in a car, I'll follow Grant while you're on the bogey. You got your wheels nearby?
Around the corner, but I miss my Land Cruiser.
Look, just throw some trash around the car's interior and you'll feel right at home.
God, you are so funny you could go into stand-up.
Everyone needs to have a backup career.
You really think this is going to lead somewhere?
If Wingo is interested in these folks, then we are too.
They're heading into the building.
Good luck.
Roger that.
Michelle rose and took up the tail. She wedged herself in with a group of people who were entering the building after Grant and his colleague. She just managed to jump onto the elevator with Grant, the other man, and 10 more people. She pushed to the back, keeping Grant and his companion in front of her. She caught snatches of their conversation, but doubted they would be discussing anything sensitive in public. They got off, as she knew they would, on the sixth floor. 4 other people exited the elevator car there, so she decided to chance it. She followed them down the hall and passed by them as they entered the offices of Vista Trading Group. It was a double-door entry and looked impressive. Grant must be pretty successful because this was a Class A building and rents were not cheap in this area of D.C. She slipped around the corner and then doubled back. Anne got the shock of her life. She darted back around the corner before the man could see her.
I just saw a guy going into Vista,
she said to Sean through her comm pack. Okay, who was it?
You are not going to believe this.
With this case, I'm starting to believe anything is possible. Who did you see?
The guy we met with earlier at the Pentagon.
Colonel Leon South?
No, the other one, Dan Marshall, Assistant Secretary for Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology. The same guy who lost €1 billion of taxpayer money.
Holy shit.
That's what I thought.
What's the connection with Vista?
Coincidence?
If it is, it's the size of Texas. We need to dig a lot deeper.
Edgar?
He already dug into Grant's background. I'm surprised he didn't find the Dan Marshall connection.
Even geniuses miss things.
Or maybe he's losing a few brain cells, too.
Don't worry, he has tons to spare.
Chapter 57. Michelle contacted Edgar and conveyed the particulars on what they needed. He promised to get right on it and call her back with his results. In the meantime, Sean and Michelle headed over in Sean's car to Reston, Virginia, to meet with the blogger George Carlton. Sean phoned ahead, and Carlton met them outside his townhouse, which was also his office, he told them, as he escorted them inside. "I'm surprised there aren't news trucks parked out here," said Sean, "after your big scoop." Carlton was short and portly and around 50. His beard was trimmed close to his chin, and his mustache drooped partially over his upper lip. He looked at them strangely and then apologized.
"Oh, my right contact has a scratch, trying to get in to see the eye doctor."
He showed them into his office, a small room off the foyer. It was piled high with books, newspaper articles, magazines, and DVD cases. A large computer sat on the top of his desk, while a server hung below in the knee hole. They all sat. Carlton rubbed his mustache and looked at them thoughtfully.
"Media trucks here would validate the world of the blogger, so that will never happen."
"The two worlds don't get along?"
said Michelle, as she perched in a chair, sharing space with a stack of magazines.
"The two worlds don't recognize each other. I'm about the truth. They're about entertainment, ratings, and the almighty dollar."
"I'm all for the truth," said Sean.
"In your call, you said you might have some information for me," said Carlton.
"Quid pro quo," said Sean. Carlton frowned.
"I'm in the business of gathering and reporting information en masse, not in dispensing it individually. And I'm certainly not going to pay for it."
"Well, we're in the business of digging down to the truth, and we need your help to do it."
"Who are you?"
Sean showed Carlton his ID card.
"Private investigators," sniffed Carlton. "And who is your client?"
"Confidential," said Sean. "But depending on what you tell us, we might have some things to tell you."
"Like what?"
"Like some more background on the story you're already reporting on, with the missing €1 billion.
Carlton smiled. "You obviously have not read my most recent blog. It went up just 30 minutes ago. I expect it to go viral any time. The eyeball rate is already through the roof."
"No, we haven't seen it," said Sean. "But I'm not a regular blog reader."
"Anything's viral is an infection."
Carlton chuckled.
"Well, I am surprised that the media trucks have not swooped in after this one, or at least the feds."
Carlton hit some keys on his keyboard and swung the screen around so they could see it. Sean and Michelle swiftly read through the contents of the most recent blog. Carlton was watching them closely.
"You don't seem too surprised."
Sean glanced at him. "That the €1 billion was going to fund weapons for people seeking to topple the Iranian government, and that an intermediate step to funnel the money involved poppies from Afghanistan that you used to make heroin? Yeah, it's a big surprise to us." He added quite truthfully, "especially the poppies and heroin part."
Carlton looked at him slyly. "I thought you were into the truth, because what you just said was bullshit."
"Who was your source?"
Carlton did an eye roll. "Please, don't even go there."
Sean swiftly counted on his hands and then looked at Michelle. "Is it 6 people killed and 5 severely wounded so far in this whole thing? Or do I have the numbers backward?" Michelle did a quick mental count.
"I think it's 5 killed, 6 critically wounded. And don't forget the 2 women missing and probably dead. That's all in this country. But that doesn't take into account all the men killed in Afghanistan. That was a real slaughter."
"That's right. I had it backward. Well, in my defense, The body count keeps changing day to day. I can't keep up. A startled Carlton looked between them. What the hell are you talking about? And you know the bombing at the motel in Alexandria? Asked Sean. That's connected to this? Said Carlton in a shaky voice. Sean said, Well, since we were there and were almost killed, yeah, it is. So what you have to take into consideration, George, is that whoever is behind this is feeding you information for some purpose that is not exactly clear yet. But what is clear is that they have a habit of cleaning up leave-behinds. Sean stared pointedly at him. Do you get what I'm saying? That I'm a leave-behind? But I'm just a blogger. I don't know anything that could hurt anyone. Well, if the source is emailing you, that leaves a trail. And that trail starts with you and ends with the source. But I'm sure my source is taking pains to cover that trail. Doesn't matter. Can't take the chance. I would expect that once your usefulness is over, he'll come, kill you, take your computer and your phone and your e-tablet and the server I see under your desk, and burn down your house and your bloody remains just to be extra sure. He looked at Michelle. What's your take? You do that, right, if you were the source? No trace?
Absolutely. But I'd dismember him first, then burn him, then use acid. Makes identifying the murder victim much harder.
Carlton looked ready to throw up, but said weakly, You're just trying to scare me.
Sean slowly shook his head. I don't have to try. You should be scared. I am. And I was with the Secret Service. Not a lot can scare me, but this sure as hell does.
You need to think about this very seriously, George. Very seriously. All those connected to this are dropping like flies. We've almost been killed 3 times, and we can take care of ourselves.
She looked at his small, chubby frame.
I don't think you're in the same situation.
But what can I do? Wailed Carlton.
Sean said, Download your emails to a flash drive and give it to me right now. Then pack a bag and buy a plane ticket that will take you far, far away from here for about a month. Check the papers, or better yet, the blogs, for what's going on back here. If we're all still alive at the end of 30 days, then come back. It should be safe.
You're shitting me!
Sean looked at Michelle, and then back at Carlton.
Or you can stay here and die,
she said to the blogger. Carlton said nothing. Finally, Sean rose. Let's go, Michelle. Waste of time here. Michelle stood.
Lead a horse to water. Sorry, George. Don't know what to tell you. Pay up the life insurance. Notify next of kin of the cash coming their way. And make sure your homeowner's insurance is paid up. For when they come and burn this place down, with you in it.
They started to leave.
Where would I go?
Yelled Carlton. Sean turned back. Where would you like to go? Carlton thought for a few moments. Always wanted to see the Sydney Opera House.
Good choice, said Sean.
Great choice,
added Michelle.
Flash drive,
said Sean, walking back over to the desk. Carlton fumbled for one in his desk drawer and slipped it into the slot on his computer.
Can you guys drive me to the airport? I can book a ticket online, and it'll take me no time to pack and snag my passport.
Why not? Said Sean.
Are you armed? Asked Carlton.
Sean pointed to Michelle. I have her, so the answer is yes, I'm armed. He watched as Carlton downloaded the emails onto the flash drive and then popped it out and handed it to Sean. They drove Carlton to the airport and dropped him off there.
Good luck, said Sean.
I think you'll need it more than me, pal, said Carlton, before he hurriedly disappeared into the crowds at Dulles.
As they drove off, Michelle said,
Think Edgar can trace the email back to the source?
If anyone can, he can. The IP address and all the other junk that I don't understand will be on the email trail. Whoever sent it will have done all they can to shut off the route. But Edgar may find something.
Find someone, you mean?
Sean glanced at her. That trip to New Zealand is looking better and better.
Yes, it is,
said Michelle as they drove on. Sean's phone buzzed. He answered it, listened, said thank you, and then turned the car in the other direction.
What's up?
Asked Michelle as he punched the gas. Dana's awake and wants to see me.
I'm surprised the hospital would notify you. You're not family.
That wasn't the hospital. It was her husband, General Curtis Brown. And he also wants to talk to us. Chapter 58. Curtis Brown, Dana's two-star husband, stood in the corner of the room with Michelle while Sean sat next to the bed and spoke to Dana. She was groggy, in pain, but alive. She even managed to smile a few times, though she winced each time she did.
Should have listened to you, Sean,
she said slowly.
Should have just left the mall.
Why didn't you?
Old habits die hard, I guess. Didn't want you to get hurt. But you look okay. And Michelle?
Standing right over there with the general, fit as a fiddle.
I'm glad, I'm so glad.
You should rest. She gripped his hand more tightly.
Those men?
Taken care of.
Have you figured out what is happening yet?
Getting closer every minute, he lied. He glanced at Brown. I know your hubby has been here every second. I think you got the marriage thing right this time. You guys were definitely meant to be together. She smiled while Brown looked down, embarrassed. Michelle patted him on the shoulder and gave him a reassuring look. Dana said,
I feel okay, just so tired.
Miss the morphine drip. Enjoy it while you can. Her eyes closed and her hands slipped away as she fell back asleep. Sean rose and went over to Brown and Michelle. Brown said, The doctor said it'll take time, but she should make a nearly complete recovery. That's great news, said Sean. Brown glanced at him and then looked away. He said, About what we talked about before. Sean said, You found out something? The coffee shop, if you've got a minute. We've got all the time you need. Let's go. They got their coffees and took a table far away from all others. Brown swirled a pack of sugar into his cup and stirred it slowly. The Pentagon is shut up like a clam on this, he said. That's what we heard. But there's been a fresh leak, Brown said.
That says we're trying to overthrow Iran by laundering funds for weapons with poppy shipments?
He glanced at her sharply. So you saw it?
We saw it on a blogger's site.
Well, that blogger is in big trouble.
I think he knows that.
Free speech is one thing, but you can't print stolen national security secrets and get away with it.
So it's true about Iran.
Brown took a sip of his coffee. People look at the slaughter in Syria and think it's bad. But they don't see what's happening in Iran or in North Korea. Those countries have shut down all communication with the outside world. Bodies are piling up like you wouldn't believe.
So we're going after Iran first and North Korea second? I didn't think North Korea had any opposition forces in country.
You'd be surprised. Many of them are displaced into South Korea, but want to go back home and change it. Iran was a test to see if something like this could work. If so, it would be deployed in North Korea.
Long shot. Even €1 billion might not buy you an overthrow of an entire government.
Didn't have to, just shake it up. If Iran or North Korea thought they were vulnerable from the inside, they might tone down the rhetoric, come to the bargaining table. Start to act like adults. Like you said, it's a long shot, but economic sanctions and threats from the outside didn't work. We like to call it war on the cheap. He shook his head. I can't believe I'm telling you this. I only found out recently. This is classified can be. If it's discovered, I told you, I'll be court-martialed. No one will find out from us, Curtis. I can guarantee you that, said Sean. I appreciate that. So, Sam Wingo? Pentagon thinks he's dirty. He's not, said Sean. How do you know that? Sean looked at Michelle and said, We've met him. He saved Michelle's life when some guys attacked us. What? Where? What guys?
probably from the same group that shot Dana. But Wingo was set up.
So you're working with him?
We're trying to, but as you can imagine, he's not in a real trusting mood.
And his son?
With the father. But please keep that to yourself.
I have to, even if I didn't want to.
If I admit to knowing that, I'll have to tell them I met with you, and then it's all over for me.
He took another sip of coffee.
And the money?
Gone.
Does he know who set him up?
He has some theories, and he's been doing some legwork to run down those theories.
Does he think it's an inside job? You thought there was a leak at my office, but I checked, Sean. There wasn't. There couldn't have been.
I'm starting to think the leak is coming from another place. What do you know about Heron Air Service or the Vista Trading Group in D.C.?
Nothing.
Are they involved somehow?
I can check into it for you.
We have somebody doing that. How about Dan Marshall at the Pentagon? You know him?
A little. We sat in on some meetings together. He heads up acquisitions. By all accounts, including my own, a straight-up guy. Please don't tell me he's mixed up in what's going on.
That's still an open question. His career will take a hit with the missing money, and even more so with where that money went. At least, that's what he told us.
I'm surprised he opened up to you.
We forgot to tell you. We have a brand new BFF.
Who? Asked Brown.
President John Cole.
Brown gaped at her. Sean asked, How about Colonel Leon South? You know him?
No, is he Army?
DIA.
I don't have much to do with the military spooks.
Brown sat back, obviously out of ideas.
What else can I do?
Keep your eyes and ears open. I'm always available by phone. But I think Dana will be keeping you pretty busy now.
Brown smiled.
I hope so.
And keep an eye on her, Curtis. Whoever's involved in this may come back to her at some point.
They'll have to go through me to get to her.
No, I have no doubt of that.
Outside the hospital, there were two SUVs parked next to their vehicle. Two men and a woman in suits and shades stood in front of them. Sean looked at Michelle.
Look familiar?
Yeah, they look just like we used to look.
You know where we're going?
I know where we're going.
Chapter 59. Alan Grant and Dan Marshall left together from the offices of Vista Trading Group.
Thanks for making the trip downtown, said Grant.
No, thank you for getting me away from the Pentagon, replied Marshall.
Rough times continuing? Asked Grant.
Getting rougher every hour, it seems. Have you seen the recent news?
Feeding off that same blogger, Iran, Afghan poppies, really?
That's what the media says. I can't comment on it, not even to you.
Anything I can do to help?
Just take care of my daughter and the grandkids.
Maybe this will blow over, Dan.
Yeah, and maybe the sun won't come up tomorrow either.
They had a meal at a nearby restaurant and talked of things other than the disaster confronting Marshall. They said their goodbyes on the street.
There's going to be some diplomatic blowback from Iran on this, observed Grant.
No doubt. This will give Tehran an excellent opportunity to stick out its chest and start screaming at us. It'll also give fodder to the whack jobs wanting to do us harm.
Well, back into the fire pit I go.
Take care, Dan. Let's talk soon.
They shook hands and Marshall walked off.
Grant watched him go for a bit, and then headed to his car in the underground garage and drove off.
The drive took longer because of construction shutting down lanes on Interstate 66. He finally got off at his exit and drove for a while longer. He had exchanged the hustle and bustle of the capital city for the bucolic peace and quiet of the rural countryside in less than 150 minutes. He cleared the guard checkpoint and continued driving up the hill. He pulled his car to a stop in front of the old radio station and got out. He looked up admiringly at the transmission tower. It was now bedecked with satellite dishes hanging off it at precise angles.
There was a hum of power emanating from there. He walked the perimeter of the station and noted that the exterior construction was all done. He went inside and gazed around at all the activity. Portable generators droned away. Power tools popped and clacked. Walls were going up. The interior vault was nearing completion. Men were moving rapidly in a choreographed construction dance with the thoughts of their bonuses for early completion firmly in their minds. Grant looked over the plans with his construction foreman and then walked the interior with the foreman, making sure that everything in the plans was actually being carried out in the execution phase. He made some modifications as they surveyed the construction and then walked back outside. He stared at the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains in the distance. Directly east was Washington. He could see none of it from here, of course, although he did watch as a commercial jetliner made its way towards Dulles Airport. He drew in a long breath and then exhaled. Shortly, they would be online and in the game. His hackers would be in their seats, clicking away on their keyboards. They would be forcing themselves into where they needed to go like explorers used to do with their machetes when working through dense jungles or forests. He had handpicked these people. He had their undivided loyalty because of money he had paid them for their services. They didn't care about geopolitics and had no horse in any international game of chicken. Grant did have horses in that game, but he was not a traitor to his country. After this was all over, America would pick itself back up and keep moving forward. Of that he was certain. I'm simply righting a wrong. He put his hand in his coat pocket and pulled out his precious document, the one he had received from Milo Pratt. This document had cost Pratt his life, but without it, Grant's plan would not have a chance. There were many things that could go wrong, but at least this one piece probably would not. He could not say the same for other elements. Sam Wingo was still out there somewhere, as were Sean King and Michelle Maxwell. Yet Grant had some ideas on how to take care of that. He glanced down at the paper, but he couldn't take his eye off the endgame, the real prize. He just had to nail it, and then he would wrap up this operation, leaving no trail behind. And he would continue on with his life. At least that was the plan. He looked up at the sky and angled his face in the right direction. His rented satellite was up there in its nice, safe orbit. The fragments his people had found down there were enough to get him where he needed to go. He looked at a different spot in the sky. Another platform was circling the Earth at that spot. So much crap up there, debris and working platforms, the space station, soon even the paying public. Well, at least the rich paying public would get their own ride into space. But for him, it was just the two platforms circling the Earth in precise patterns. They had nothing to do with each other, at least not yet. But soon, they would be inextricably intertwined, at least in his own mind. As for the rest of the world, they would never know of the twining of the two hunks of metal. All signs would be eradicated because of a particularly ingenious execution method he had conjured that would literally bounce any evidence all over the digital space and then explode it into a trillion pieces. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. He dropped his gaze back to the ground. If only the problems down here could be so easily dealt with. He checked his watch as he turned to look back at all the construction activity. He glanced at his phone as the message came in. The task was complete. What Grant had ordered done had been done. That meant he had somewhere to go. He had someone to see. If the person refused his request, that meant he had someone to kill. Someone else to kill. Chapter 60. "Haven't been here in a while," said Sean. As the SUV they were riding in pulled through the gates that were capable of stopping a runaway tank.
Yeah, and the last time wasn't very pleasant,
noted Michelle. Yeah, that I remember. They were escorted into the west wing of the White House. You never pulled presidential protection duty, did you?
My career ended before I got there. One of my few regrets.
It's not all it's cracked up to be.
Liar,
she said, flicking her elbow lightly into his side. They were shown into the Roosevelt room and told to wait. As Sean wandered the room, gazing at several famous paintings on the wall, Michelle said,
Recognize any of the protection detail?
Been gone too long. All my contemporaries are off double-dipping at other agencies. You?
The woman outside the hospital looked familiar, but I never knew her name.
Jealous?
Yeah, why wouldn't I be?
You get to work with me full-time.
Doesn't change my answer.
Thanks a lot. The door opened and the lead agent walked in, followed by President Cole and the rest of his detail. Sean and Michelle instantly rose to their feet and waited until Cole sat across from them before resuming their seats. Cole stared across at them. Blogger?
Yes, sir, said Sean.
What do you know about it?
Sean didn't answer right away.
He was trying to size up the question and the intent behind it.
George Carlton? Independent? Not tied to any news agency?
You went to see him?
So your people have been following us?
No, they had Carlton's place staked out. You showed up. One reason that prompted this meeting.
Sean studied Cole. The man seemed to have aged 10 years since they had last seen him at Camp David.
He's thinking this is his Watergate, thought Sean. I'm surprised that the feds hadn't already visited him.
Free speech, Fourth Estate, responded Cole. Tricky thing. I'm not looking to censure the media. I get accused of enough crap without fueling that fire. But you're not the government. You maybe can do things we can't do.
And then share them with you.
Sean glanced nervously at her.
Cole said, I thought we agreed that that's exactly what you would do. Work this thing together. Starting with finding Sam Wingo by using your connection with the Sun.
Sean glanced again at Michelle but said nothing. Cole added,
And if you're covering for your buddies at Hoover, I already know the FBI lost the boy.
We apparently don't have buddies at Hoover, sir.
Cole shrugged. This ends right. It's no harm, no foul, as far as I'm concerned.
That's very generous of you, sir, said Sean, although the look on his face did not match his words.
Cole did not seem to notice, or if he did, he did not seem to care. Sean said, So, Iran? That's what we were doing?
Not as simple as that, no.
Money for weapons to fuel insurgents in Iran, with North Korea next on the drawing board?
Who told you that?
Private investigators, sir. We have to maintain confidences.
Just as we are with you.
So, if it's not that simple, can you enlighten us?
Why?
We have to know the big picture if we're going to make a dent in this, Mr. President.
Cole stared at him for a few seconds before leaning back against the couch.
As was mentioned in that stupid blog, the Euros are going to purchase poppies for heroin production. Not really, of course. The poppies would never be used for drug making, at least not by us.
But you needed a way to launder the Euros, speculated Sean, before they got to their final destination.
Cole nodded. The purchased poppies would end up in a third party's hands.
Let me guess, said Sean. An international arms dealer?
And then the weapons obtained in return for the poppies would make their way to Iran.
And what would the arms dealer do with the poppies?
I said the poppies would not be used by us for making heroin. I can't speak for anyone else.
Permission to speak candidly, Mr. President, said Sean.
Considering you're no longer in the Secret Service, you can speak candidly whenever you want.
Whoever came up with this plan needs to be fired, sir.
It's idiotic. With so many ways it could go wrong, and did.
Cole's face flushed, but then his anger quickly subsided.
I accepted the person's resignation 2 days ago, not that that matters. The buck stops with me. I authorized it. I own it. The room was quiet for a few seconds. Cole said, "The blogger?"
"Out of the game," said Sean. He knew nothing about his source.
"You believe him?"
"I can read fear in a man's eyes," said Sean. "He was clueless, just looking for the next big scoop."
"Do you have leads to the source?"
"Working on that right now."
"If it came by email, my people could work back to the source, but..."
"That tricky balance thing. Free speech, the Fourth Estate."
"Right. A scandal is one thing, perhaps survivable. Covering up the scandal is unforgivable."
"Then let us do our thing, Mr. President," said Sean.
"Can you find Sam Wingo?"
"I believe so."
"You think he's involved in this?"
"We think he was set up."
"By whom?"
"Not clear yet, but we have some leads and we're running them down."
The president rose. "Then I should let you get on with it. I have an appointment outside the office."
Sean and Michelle stood.
"Thank you, sir," said Sean.
"Anything I can do, let me know. I can't drop everything I'm doing, but this is a priority for me."
"Understood."
Sean and Michelle followed at a distance, as Cole and his protection detail, surrounding him in a hard diamond pattern, walked down the passageway. They went outside, where the motorcade was waiting. The presidential limo, known as the Beast, sat there with its engine running. DC cops had already cleared all roads the motorcade would travel on. The Beast did not stop for red lights or anything else. Before the door was closed, Cole looked up at them.
"I'm counting on you both."
Then the motorcade was off. Michelle looked wistful as the long line of vehicles sped away.
"It is impressive," said Sean.
"Yeah,"
said Michelle.
"But it gets old fast," she snorted.
"Right."
"This way," said a Secret Service agent.
They were driven back to their vehicle outside the hospital. As they climbed into the Land Cruiser, Sean, noting his partner's subdued look, said,
"That was your past, Michelle. You can't live in the past."
"Sure you can, Sean, if you're not too thrilled with your future."
Chapter 61. "His father-in-law," said Sean. He and Michelle were sitting across from Edgar Roy at his farmhouse west of D.C. The place looked asymmetrical in that the interior and furnishings were rustic, but there was gleaming computer equipment everywhere. Edgar had texted them on their way back from the hospital that he had news to share. They had immediately headed to his farmhouse. Edgar sat at his desk, which was actually a large rectangular section of sanded and painted 3-inch-thick plywood, painted black, that rested on 4 sawhorses. Sitting on it were 3 giant computer screens set next to one another. Edgar nodded but looked oddly chagrined.
"Yes, Dan Marshall is Alan Grant's father-in-law."
"His father-in-law?" exclaimed Sean again.
"Yes, Alan Grant married Leslie Marshall 9 years ago. They have 3 children. Dan Marshall is a widower. His wife Maggie died of cancer 2 years ago. He paused. "I'm sorry that I didn't find this connection earlier. I can't believe I missed it."
"It's okay,"
said Michelle in a soothing tone.
"It just shows you're human like the rest of us."
"Yeah," agreed Sean. "Only you have 4 times the brain power of the rest of us."
This seemed to perk up Edgar's spirits, and he continued in a firmer voice. "Alan Grant served in the Army and was honorably discharged. He heads up Vista Trading Group. I could find no connection between Vista and Heron Air Service." Sean said, "And Grant's parents, you said you'd found something there."
"A suicide pact. They killed themselves back in 1988 when Grant was 13.
Michelle said,
"Suicide pact? What was the reason?"
"Franklin Grant served as an assistant to the NSC back in the 1980s. He became embroiled in the Iran-Contra affair, and I guess he couldn't live with it, and neither could his wife. All very, very sad. Michelle looked at Sean.
Okay, is that significant?
Maybe. Sean looked at Edgar. What else can you tell us about Franklin Grant's duties at the National Security Council? Most of it, Sean, is still classified. But from what I could gather, Franklin Grant might have been in the loop on the scheme but wasn't in favor of it. I dug a bit deeper than just the papers and other media reports at the time. It seems that Grant tried to speak out against his superiors, but they used him as a scapegoat. Edgar looked down for a moment and said, I know what that feels like.
We know you do, Edgar. So a scapegoat and leaving behind a young and suddenly orphaned Alan Grant.
Sean looked thoughtful. I remember reading about Iran-Contra in the papers, of course, although I came to Washington after it was over. I don't remember the name, Franklin Grant. Edgar glanced at his screen. There wasn't much to find. There were juicier parts out there. Reagan and all his high-ranking administration officials, Oliver North, North Secretary, Manuel Noriega, Franklin Grant seems to have simply gotten lost in the history shuffle.
But he was the only one who paid the ultimate price, right?
Michelle asked. Sean added, from what I remember, even though a ton of documents ended up somehow being lost or withheld during the course of the investigation, quite a few administration officials were indicted and or convicted, including the then Secretary of Defense. But a bunch of the convictions were either overturned on appeal or vacated, and those that weren't were pardoned by the next administration. I think North got jail time, but he was pardoned too, or something like that. Edgar said he actually received a suspended sentence and probation and did some community service. But his conviction was later vacated, and all charges were later dropped. So, Franklin Grant was really the only one who bit the bullet, said Sean.
Maybe despite trying to be a whistleblower, he had a guilty conscience.
Or more integrity than some of the others involved, replied Sean. But the bottom line is, this gives Alan Grant a great motive to have planned what is happening now.
I'll confess I was too young to really follow Iran-Contra. What exactly happened?
Sean looked at Edgar. I wasn't too young, but you've just done the research. You can probably explain it better than I can, Edgar. The details are a little fuzzy for me. Edgar looked at him sadly. Your massive brain cell loss. Michelle coughed to cover her laugh. Sean looked indignant. Okay, listen up. I have a normal brain cell loss for someone my age. There are medications that can help, offered Edgar sincerely, and I know some specialists in the field. Michelle had to stifle another laugh. Iran-Contra, okay? Can we get to it? Said Sean expectantly, because we're wasting time focusing on my brain shrinkage. Edgar sat back. It sounds complicated, but it's actually very simple. It started out as a way to free American hostages held by a radical group with ties to Iran. The original scheme was for Israel to ship weapons to Iran, and then the U.S. would resupply Israel and receive payment from them. Then it devolved into a straight arms for hostages scheme in which weapons would be sold to Iran, something that was banned under U.S. law, and the hostages would be released in return for those sales. Then the plan was later modified so that an intermediary in Iran was used to sell the weapons, and a portion of the resulting proceeds was used to funnel money to the Contras in Nicaragua. This was done so that Manuel Noriega and his Panamanian defense forces could help overthrow the Sandinista leadership, which was no friend of ours. But additional support to the Contras by American intelligence agencies had been prohibited by an act of Congress. Thus, the reason for the clandestine plan to get around that prohibition while at the same time trying to gain release of the hostages from the Iranian forces through the parallel arms sales.
And you call that simple?
Exclaimed Michelle. Well, yes,
said Edgar matter-of-factly.
As simple as politicians seem to be able to make anything, noted Sean. And Noriega later turned out not to be such a good friend.
Edgar nodded. Not unusual. After all, we liked Saddam Hussein until we didn't like Saddam Hussein.
Remind me never to run for public office.
Or become a dictator, amended Sean.
Sean leaned back in his chair and looked at Michelle. Iran-Contra back in the 1980s, and now George Carlton's blogger source has alleged that the U.S. has attempted to funnel money through sales of Afghan poppies to anti-Iranian forces to buy weapons in an effort to overthrow the government there. It's not an exact parallel.
But maybe the best he could do under the circumstances. He didn't initiate the scheme, Sean. Maybe he just found out about it, and that was the catalyst for him to do what he's doing.
Are we talking about Alan Grant? Asked Edgar. Sean nodded. He's in cahoots with someone with connections to Heron Air Service. Sam Wingo was following that guy. He might have led him to Grant, for all we know. Edgar said, But I could find no connection between Vista and Heron. There might be no discoverable connection, or they might have covered their tracks really well. They might even have been the air service that was used to get the cash out of Afghanistan. Wingo said men flashing CIA creds took the shipment from him. Michelle said,
But then the cash probably didn't end up in Iran.
No, I think it might have ended up back here.
Look, maybe this is just a very complicated robbery. Grant is Marshall's son-in-law. Marshall knew about the Euros. Maybe he let it slip to Grant, and Grant plans the heist and nabs the cash.
Sean shook his head. I would have thought that, but for the history of the parents. Pretty strong revenge motive there. I don't think it's as simple as a billion euros. If it was a simple robbery, why give George Carlton all that ammo for his blog? No. He's discrediting Cole and his administration. And Grant doesn't need the money, does he, Edgar?
His business appears to be very successful, with several significant clients in the government sector. His home is worth nearly $1 million, and the mortgage was paid off 3 years ago. His credit history is excellent, and he has no outstanding judgments or pending lawsuits against him. I even hacked into his tax returns. His income places him in the top tier of earners.
You hacked into his tax records? Isn't that illegal?
Not really. I have pretty much carte blanche to go where I need to go. National security is a very large hall pass, and I just sort of extended that privilege to the work I was doing for you, he added a bit lamely.
Sean slipped the flash drive from his pocket. And now we have this.
What's on it? Asked Edgar eagerly, as he took it from Sean and popped it into his computer's USB slot.
The blogger's sources' emails. There's the usual IP trail on there. We're hoping you can tell us where it came from. I doubt the sender made it easy, but if at all possible, we need for you to track it back.
Edgar pounded his keys at speed as his eyes darted over the screen. Usual protocols didn't work.
How do you know that?
Because I just employed them.
Sean and Michelle stared at each other. In a low voice, Sean said, I think he's actually growing more brain cells every day, not losing them. Maybe he's taking some of mine by like osmosis or something.
Do you even know what osmosis is?
I did back in high school. In a louder voice, he said, If you figure it out, let us know ASAP.
Sean and Michelle got up and left.
Why do I feel so stupid every time I'm around him? Said Sean.
Because by comparison, we are.
She stopped walking, and Sean bumped into her.
What the hell? He exclaimed. Michelle, are you...
He stopped talking when he saw what she was looking at.
Sam Wingo stared back at them.
Chapter 62.
You're a hard man to find, said Sean.
Well, here I am, said Wingo. He took a step forward.
"Yes, here you are," said Sean. "And how did you come to be here?"